Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Cathode Ray Mission. I'm your host, Adam Ferens, and tonight the topic is the Golden Girls. My guests tonight are Alan Bryan, who should be along shortly, and John Kaufman. Say hello.
Hi.
Okay, John, since you're here and we're going to get it going while Alan figures out where he's at, how did you first come to watch Golden Girls?
I first came to watch Golden Girls, frankly, because my mother was watching it. And she said we were living in Los Angeles. She had her house. I had an apartment. And she called me. Mom was not a person to do this normally, but she called me up and said, there's this show that you've just got to see. It's hysterically funny, and there are four great characters. So I turned it on, and I agreed with her immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I like about a lot of shows that really work for me. It's the characters, and the interrelationship of the four of them, which
mm-hmm.
I think is absolutely priceless.
Absolutely, absolutely. And here we have Alan. Welcome, Alan.
Hi. Hello.
Hello. Well, I just asked John the first question, and that is, how did you first come to watch Golden Girls?
I have no idea. I probably just saw it on one night and, you know, wanted to see if it was funny. I don't remember.
Yeah,
besides, we all know what Golden Girls really is.
Yeah, I'm a little bit like you. I just know that when I was younger, it was just a show that I suddenly became aware was on. I can't remember if I started watching it when it was very first on, if it was a couple of seasons in, but I remember that it was just there, and then I remember, you know, when I was a teenager, well, after it had ended and into my early 20s, it always seemed to be on reruns, and it kind of became one of those comfort food type shows where I could sit down and watch an episode or two pretty much any time it was on and not be disappointed and feel satisfied. Would either of you say that that's something that you've experienced with this show? Let's go with you, John. Is that something you've experienced or no?
It is one of those shows. It's also that I already liked at least two of the regulars. Beatrice
mm-hmm.
Arthur and Betty White.
Yeah.
And I'm a major Betty White fan. I think she's great.
Oh, we're going to be getting into the cast in a bit. So what about you, Alan? Would you say it's fair to call this comfort food?
Well, yeah, I was a big fan of Maude, so I'd watch anything Bea Arthur was in. I liked the Mary Tyler Moore Show, so I'd watch Betty White. But
mm-hmm.
I remember in the 90s when we were watching it. I don't remember if it was reruns by then or what. Well, how long was it? I don't remember the years it was on. Sorry, I just woke up from a nap. I apologize.
No, that's okay. I mean, you have to rest up for the show because you know there's going to be a quiz after this. No,
what
it
was
on from September of 85 through May of 92.
Okay. I remember telling my wife around 99, we were watching a rerun, that, but you know, that these women had been the Charlie's Angels of the 50s and 60s. And you know, and I said, they're retired, now they're living together, and they're, you know, and Charlie will call, in the last episode, Charlie will call them in for one last mission. I'm sorry, I was messing with my wife's head at the time. What can I say?
Did she believe you? did you go and marry Rose Nyland, Alan?
No, I'm just telling you what I did at the time.
First of them I was aware of was Bea Arthur, but it wasn't because of Maude. It was because I saw Mame on Broadway, and she was spectacularly funny.
Well, she remains the best part of the Lucille Ball version of that.
Ugh.
Yeah, that's an appropriate response to that movie. But she was actually good in it. Because, well, after
all, yeah,
that's
her part on Broadway. She was wonderful on Broadway.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about the Golden Girls. What has this show meant to you in terms of, like, as a viewer, as a person? So we'll go with you, John. What has it meant to you over the years?
Well, over the years, it's something interesting these days, because I'm living in a retirement community now, and as I have gotten to know people my age, and a lot of them are older, and a lot of them are women, I begin to realize how well written and how those ladies are not as much of an exaggeration as I originally thought they were.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look around our place here, I know several Rose Nyblins. There are a couple of Dorothys. You can see not the stereotypes, but the types. And that's one of the things I liked about it. The main thing I like about Golden Girls is the
mm-hmm.
interrelationship of the characters. I thought they were brilliantly written.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, this is a show my girlfriend and I were watching many episodes in the lead up to this episode tonight, and it's just such a great depiction of types, and it's mostly a positive depiction of friendship and women over 50, without ever really getting super preachy, you know. It never felt like, this is a very special episode of the Golden Girls, you know?
I think that really, if it didn't kill several sitcoms, it certainly, I really don't like it when we have a very special episode. I always found those self-conscious and not as good as the normal run.
Yeah.
But that may just be me.
So what about you, Alan? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, like you say, the show's comfort food. I didn't want it to preach at me. I just wanted to, you know, get some laughs, and you know, just it's mindless entertainment when you're in a show like that. You know, it's you just want to kick back and, you know, listen to B. Arthur throw zingers at Rue McClanahan all night.
Yeah,
that's about all it is.
And, you know, the thing is it's such a great, you know, each of these are great, great characters. And sure, you know, you got kind of the naive housewife from the Midwest in Rose. You've got the wise old lady from the old country in Sophia. You've got the streetwise divorced Dorothy, who's a teacher, and then you've got Blanche, who is, like, you know, something out of Tennessee Williams and Gone with the Wind. But yet they work. They work as characters because there's so much more than those one-line descriptions. So here's a question. Can we actually choose a favorite character? And it doesn't even have to be one of the main characters, because there were several recurring roles in the show, not least of which was Herb Edelman's wonderful Stan, Dorothy's ex-husband. So do we have any favorites? Alan?
Are the other characters?
Of any of them. I mean, they can be the recurring parts or they can be the main parts.
I just like Blanche and Dorothy. I mean, those two are my favorites because, you know, there was always a new man in her life, and, you know, Dorothy was always, you know, the more realistic of one, like, yeah, one night stand, you know, wonder and all that sort of thing, you know?
Yeah.
It was more more of a, it just made, that's all, it was, I don't know, it was more of a, Dorothy was grounded in reality, and Blanche was always like, you know, swept off her feet sort of thing, and whatever, she just want, I don't know what she was looking for. She's like the person, you know, like, I heard a disco record, I'm buying all disco now, and then the next week, I just heard a punk record, I'm going to buy all punk now. Whatever new fad was in, you know. Dorothy liked stability, Blanche liked to change men like she changed her underwear, I guess, if she ever wore any.
Oh, I think she did. That's how she helped to attract the men. So what about you, John? Do you have any favorites?
Yeah, I certainly do. After falling in love with the delightful Sue Ann Nevins for many years on Mary Tyler Moore, I think Rose is just wonderful. She is. I love the way that Rose is permanently out of sync, not only with the other three, but with life itself. She's just on her own wavelength, and there's nothing anybody can do about it. And I think she's delightful. I am a tremendous fan of Betty White. I like just about everything she's done, but I think that character is just so screamingly funny. I think they
absolutely
all are, but Rose is my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and this is something else we have to talk about before we delve into the nitty-gritty of the show itself, but, you know, there have been a lot of great sitcoms over the years, and there have been a lot of great sitcom casts, but my God, if this isn't one of the best ever assembled. The way they fit together, how perfectly cast they are, I mean, I can't imagine anybody else in any of the roles, even though I know that originally they wanted Rue McClanahan for Rose and they wanted Betty White for Blanche. But, you know, that didn't happen, and thank God it didn't. So what do you guys have to say? Where would you guys put this? How do you think that this compares to other great sitcom casts, Alan?
Well, it's a good. The cast is very, very good, very put together. There's no weak parts of the cast. It's not like you say, oh, I wish they didn't have that character, or I wish they didn't have this character. I mean, when you're talking about the main cast, everybody's strong, and that's a plus. You know, I mean, you know, it's like Barney Miller. We didn't have a weak cast member.
Nope.
Andy Griffith didn't have a real weak cast member. Some shows are just, you know, they thrive on the good actors, and they, you know, they didn't have any bad ones to jettison or overshine or The Place or anything like that. You got the same thing, you know. I mean, they all were professional in what they were doing, and they could dish it out, and they all looked their parts. It just worked, and that's why people tuned in every week. Why it was a strong, you know, people young and old liked it. It's not just a show that appealed to older people. I know young people liked it too because they got laughs out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's also part of a great age for sitcoms. I mean, you talk about a flawless cast. it was one of, roughly speaking, MASH had that going for it. And so did Cheers, and so did Night Court. And so later on, I understand Frasier, although I haven't seen it. And it's just, it's like having a miniature Broadway show once a week. It's that quality, it really is. And it's not only the four of them, although they were wonderful. As you said, Adam, it's the supporting cast as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and you know, some of the names escape me, but they have the two actors that played Blanche's father over the first two or three seasons. They had recurring neighbors, friends that usually Sophia's friends were the ones that you mostly saw recurring, little old ladies, especially during the period where she worked at the taco stand. You know, and of course, Stan, and then there were the kids and the brothers and the sisters that came in. And, you know, we didn't see them a lot, you know. Stan we saw the most. Stan was the most regular recurring character. He was probably in, I'm going to say, maybe 8 to 10 episodes a season out of an average of about 24 episodes a season. And, you know, that's great. But this is a show that, I mean, each of these people could have, and in some cases, I mean, at least two of them have actually led their own shows. So, you know, this is a powerhouse cast. Alan, you talked about being a fan of Bea Arthur from her days on Maude. So let's dig into Bea Arthur. What are your thoughts on Bea Arthur, both as Dorothy and her career in general?
Well, I always thought she just had a presence that, you know, she could, because of her height, her size, her voice, she, you know, she could dominate. She was the focus. You watch Maude, there's no other way that show could have been. I mean, it was her. Even when she guest starred in All in the Family, it became almost a Maude episode because there's no way Archie was going to win with her. And, you know, and there's a reason why we all remember her saying, "God will get you for that, Walter," in that deadpan voice, you know, because she was going to win. And she just had an authority about her that if she had done another sitcom at some point, you'd still say, well, you know, it's going to be, you know, she's still going to take the start, she's going to take the main cast and run with it. I don't know, heck, if they had ever done a Madam Secretary show back then, she could have played that role. You know, I mean, that would have been perfect for her, something like that. Or if she had done a drama and been a female lawyer or something, she could have probably pulled it off. We only seen her, and I don't recall seeing her in anything but comedy, but I think she could have done something stronger at some point if she'd wanted to.
Yeah, and she definitely, you know, I mean, this is a woman that we have to remember, in addition to being a very talented actress. She was an ex-Marine.
She was also great in musicals, which people don't remember. And I don't know if now is the time to bring it up or not, but she and Betty White really didn't get along that well. You never knew it from watching the show, but they really didn't. I'm not sure whose fault that was.
That's interesting. Now, I do know that I've heard that Rue McClanahan and Betty White got along pretty well because they both were absolutely in love with animals.
Yes, they got along very well. And I've just lost her name, but so did Sophia got along with everybody.
Estelle Getty.
Yes, but I suspect that Bea Arthur she probably didn't like anybody who she considered stealing the spotlight from her. I believe she was. I believe in a lot of ways she was a real diva.
I don't know. I haven't heard that.
But
I've
heard she was. But she did get along with Lucille Ball, which again is not one of the easiest things to do.
Unless you're Robert Osborne.
Yeah.
But so now you'd mentioned you know, being really big on Betty White, and really who isn't, because you know it's Betty fucking White. But
she was a pioneer.
You know,
she had her own show back in the early 50s.
Mm-hmm.
She was one of the first women to have a show of her own.
Yeah, and she's continued to headline shows. She's continued to get guest spots and recurring parts. I mean, she ended up doing three or four episodes spread out over a few seasons on Community, where she played an anthropology teacher that went off the deep end.
She had another entire career too. She's a bright woman, and partially because of her husband Alan Ludden. She was a regular on many, many, many of the game shows in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm. So let's get into Betty White a little bit, and we'll let you start off with that, John. So where do you want to go with Betty White?
Well, I think something interesting to start with is just the contrast between the Happy Home Wrecker, Sue Ann Nivens on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and Rose, who is basically a very sweet character. She's, as I said before, she's a little out of sync with the rest of the world, but she had a good heart. You couldn't say that about Sue Ann Nivens.
No.
Betty White has a bigger range than people think she does.
Absolutely. So,
And then at age 90, whatever it was, by popular demand, she was the host of Saturday Night Live. I mean, she will do anything.
Yeah. Just put her in every Hall of Fame.
She was pretty good on that show on the old, you know, the one with Valerie Bertinelli.
Hot in Cleveland, it has.
Was it Hot
title.
In Cleveland or Hot in Cincinnati or something?
Hot
something
in
like
Cleveland,
that.
Yes.
Yeah,
I never
she
saw
was,
it.
Yeah. That show was actually dang good. I got to say, it was good.
It's a show that I never got a chance to watch.
You should. It's the first three seasons are definitely decent. And Betty White does not play the type. She plays a character that's, you know, just a little, but that it always does the unexpected. And that's why you got to give her, you got to say, well, yeah, she's got it. She's still got it, you know?
Absolutely. So, you know, we've still got two members of the cast to go. So what about Estelle Getty? Now, you know, she was actually the youngest member of the cast, despite playing the oldest member of the cast. So what do we have to say about Estelle Getty? John?
I was going to say she is way younger than her character.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked her relationship with Bea Arthur on the show.
Yeah.
I thought that was consistently funny. The other thing that I like about a great sitcom, and that was one, is how consistent the characters are. After a while, like your friends, you more or less knew how they were going to react to something.
Mm-hmm.
And Sophia would always bring everybody sort of back to reality.
Oh, yeah. Sophia was great. Sophia was just a great, great character. You know, but What else did Sal Getty do, you know, outside of Golden Girls, that we can really remember her for?
Stop or my mom will shoot.
I was going to say, that's about it. You know, she's one of those people.
Yeah, that was horrible.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, she was one of those people that she really just got that one great role, but God damn if she didn't run with it, you know?
Yeah, everybody else had more than one part, but she really, you're right, she really had that one role.
Although, you know, I guess that she did eventually end up on Empty Nest doing quite a few episodes of that.
After another one I've never seen.
Yeah. Now, you know, in doing my research on this, I noticed that she originated the role of Mrs. Beckoff in the original run of Torch Song Trilogy.
That's right. That is right.
So, you know, so there's some Broadway performers on this show. So,
well, Bea Arthur had quite a long career on Broadway.
Oh, yeah.
I believe she was in a couple of Sondheim shows also.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's not forget let's not forget the last one, Rue McClanahan. Now, Alan, you'll know this. Rue McClanahan, of course, was very familiar with Bea Arthur because they did six seasons of Maude together.
Yes.
Where she played Vivian. So, and then, of course, she was on Mama's Family, which is not the greatest show. And then she did Blanche. So what are our thoughts on Rue McClanahan, Alan?
Well, she's a very... She likes to be the center of attention no matter what show she's on, I think, and she can get it, you know. She's very funny. She doesn't mind being self-deprecating, I think, because you got to admit it. The character of Blanche, you are going to be a little of that. So she's certainly. She has a limited range, but she's funny. And I always make this joke. There was a time when you had Rue McClanahan in Starship Troopers, and Betty White was in that movie with it was a heist caper film with Sean Penn, where there was a storm coming and those guys were trying to rob a bank. And so I said, and what was Bea Arthur starring in? Godzilla 98. She was playing Godzilla. I'm sorry. Because remember, Rue McClanahan was in Starship Troopers as a blind professor.
And she was good.
She was so old, but she was there.
Absolutely.
So. I always make that joke about the Golden Girls, you know, in their movie career, you know, at the same time they were all in three big films and Bea Arthur was playing Godzilla. That's a shot at Bea Arthur, but you know, at the time it was funny. Then Betty White was in that series of horror films with the giant crocodile or alligator or whatever that thing was. Lake Placid?
Yeah.
Didn't she do the Lake Placid films?
Yes, she did.
Yeah. So, you know, now you don't see Rue McClanahan in a lot of films, but when I saw her in Starship Troopers, I just about jumped out of my seat. But like, what's she doing there? But it was good.
I think when you mentioned Tennessee Williams, you had something there because Blanche was forever a star of her own soap opera. She would create drama no matter what. in which she was always a star, at least in her own mind.
Right. She was Scarlett O'Hara. Oh, my God.
Blanche DuBois. I know it's the same name, but it's true.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. But, you know, now we had the, and I mentioned a little bit of the recurring cast, but, you know, there was Stanley much later in the show, seasons 5, 6, and 7. We had Miles Weber, who was played by Harold Gould, who was Rose's boyfriend that ended up, it was revealed eventually that he was a former bookie bookkeeper for the mob, you know, and you know, we had didn't start having I think maybe the last two seasons we started seeing Sophia's dead husband, and we had you know, Blanche's brother and sister, one of whom was gay. Blanche's brother was gay. And that was an episode that I actually just saw the other day. And it was actually handled pretty matter of fact. And, you know, being that it was the 80s and they didn't make a super big thing out of it, I do like that the show. That's actually, I have to say something here. That's actually one thing that I like about the show. And it goes back to how they didn't have very special episodes. You know, they handled big topics, but they made the big topics relatable to the audience and the characters by bringing it into the characters' lives through people they were intimate with, be it family members or close friends. And these were not going to be people that, you know, oh, well, yeah, they knew that little black boy that lost his mother and wasn't it so sad, and we'll never see him again, but now he's going to go live with a nice white couple out in the suburbs. No, this was going to be something where maybe Rose met some runaway kid at the help center, and this was going to be a character that she was going to encounter over and over again, and you'd get to know their story, and they'd get, and it would actually affect them, and they didn't belabor the point while never shying away from controversy or the inherent drama. And I think that was something that the show excelled at that a lot of other shows, frankly, fall flat on their face with. Okay, go on.
In a way, I think they handled so-called big issues, Golden Girls did, with a lot more subtlety and in a lot of ways more effectively than some of the Norman Lear shows, which were known for doing that.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I like All in the Family a great deal, but when they had a big issue, that was the whole show, and they had a big issue. The Golden Girls, you're right, it's different. Somehow those issues were just part of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
A central part for the moment, but it didn't stick out like a thumb, and it did on some of the Norman Lear shows.
Yep.
Yeah, Norman would have to shoehorn things in, and the Golden Girls would just come natural to them.
Right.
Yes.
Some
and I
shows
think a lot
pull
of that
off. Some shows just did that better.
And I think a lot of that does have to come from Suzanne Harris, who was the creator and original head writer for the show. You know, her and her spouse, Paul Younger Whit, who was the other showrunner along with her. They did a marvelous job keeping that show going. And making sure that it wasn't preachy.
How much of the run were they the showrunners for? Did it go all the way?
They were there the whole time, but there were some seasons where they were more involved with other projects. because Suzanne Harris went off to create like Empty Nest or Nurses, you know, to do this and to do that. Her husband was always there, but sometimes he was less involved as well because he was helping her. They had some lieutenants that took over, but usually it was for like maybe part of a season while they weren't as hands on, and thankfully they had a really strong staff who managed to keep the show going.
Overall, it was a pretty consistent show.
Yeah, and I do have to say something else about Suzanne Harris. You know, she wrote her own struggle with chronic fatigue syndrome into a storyline about Dorothy being diagnosed with that. And this is a show that talked openly about, you know, mental issues and depression, obesity, interracial relationships, just a whole mess of things. And yet, like I said, it never got preachy. It never hit you over the head with anything. Mm-hmm. You know, you could always count on Sophia to come up with some inappropriate zinger at some point, but that was about it.
And Rose never quite got it. Although she did know what was going on in her own way.
Yeah, and of course, you know, and even when Rose did know something, like they were playing a game of, I believe it must have been Trivial Pursuit or some sort of Trivial Pursuit knockoff, and Blanche asked her a question, and she knew that it was Ina Kleina Knock Music, and Blanche and Dorothy just stared at her, and Blanche said, "How did you know that?" And Rose said, "Oh, it's because they play that on the Looney Tunes." There was this one where Elmer Fudd was shooting at the rabbit at Bugs down a hole, and Dorothy said, "Excuse me, Rose, Blanche, could you hand me the rule book?" Bops her over the head because, well, you know, that's just what they did. But, you know, Rose was allowed to have her moments, even if her moments weren't rooted in typical or traditional origins of information, you know. Rose is a wonderful, wonderful character, you know. And you had two characters that were storytellers, or maybe three with Blanche, because Dorothy wasn't much of a storyteller, because Blanche would talk about back home, back home, back home. But, you know, you had two characters on the show. With Rose, it was always back in St. Olaf. And with Sophia, it was always picture it, Sicily, and then some name, and then some year. So, did either of you guys, are there anything that you noticed, any recurring elements like that I might have missed?
No.
Nothing I can think of.
I do want to correct the other gentleman on something. He said Rue McClanahan was Blanche Dubois.
Yeah,
Street Streetcar Desire. That's not correct. It was Blanche Devereaux.
I did not mean in the Golden Girls. I meant she thought of herself as Blanche Dubois. She always had a drama going.
I get it.
Yeah, but she saw herself as a Tennessee Williams character.
She saw herself as a tragic heroine no matter what.
This is why I should not nap right before doing a podcast.
She saw herself as the star of a great drama, which was her life.
Well, she was always coming in acting like it. Every time she come in the front door after a date or something, it was like, oh boy, here we go again.
That's why I said Blanche Dubois. She makes everything into a three-act soap opera.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then we can't, and, you know, like I said, I thought this was going to be a short episode, and I think it probably will definitely be ending before the hour is over. But we can't finish this episode without mentioning the one element of the show we haven't, and that is the theme song, Thank You for Being a Friend. Is that not one of the great theme songs in TV history or what?
Well, yes, that one, and also, for example, the Cheers theme song, the Golden Girls theme song, manages to not only say the premise of the show, but the mood of the show within 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You knew what you were getting into.
Yeah. So you're a music guy, Alan. What do you think of the theme?
While it's appropriate and it's catchy and everything, it never quite hooked me in the way that some theme songs do. You know, my favorite theme song was the Johnny Quest theme. I'm sorry, it's you know, I like the big jazzy instrumentals. I did like the theme song for Laverne and Shirley, but that was, you know, that was poppy. But I don't know, nothing wrong with the theme song, and it was appropriate, but you know, it's not one that I would have bought on 45, you know, like I did some other things. So I remember I had the Rockford Files on 45 when I was a kid. The theme
That's
song for that.
Song.
That was Mike Post. And every Mike Post put out theme songs that you wanted to have, in, you know, when to listen to. Hill Street Blues and Rockford Files and some others, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know. The theme song, it was okay. You know. Certainly hooked me more than the one for Seinfeld.
If I had to pick a favorite theme song, not just comedies, it would be Mission Impossible.
In my top 10. But, you know, Johnny Quest, the Avengers theme song, Perry Mason's theme song, and then probably Mission Impossible.
But among the comedies, Cheers, it's kind of a situation comedy that runs as long as Golden Girls did. In a sense, it's like reconnecting with friends once a week. And I don't mean the show Friends, because I can't stand it, but I mean...
Well, I hate Friends. I hate Cheers and Friends, you know, about equally, so I can't watch either one. But
yeah,
no,
I've come to love Cheers over the years, but I've never gotten the appeal of Friends.
I tried to watch one episode of Friends, and I bailed it two-thirds of the way through because I don't like those people, and I would never... They're fiends, not friends. Friends watch fiends.
I'm a major fan of Cheers, but if I had to pick my favorite sitcom of all time, it would probably be Night Court.
I like Marky Post, but the show was not one that I watched regularly.
No.
It didn't appeal to me. Nothing wrong with Harry Anderson. He was funny, but except I didn't like the other characters. I liked Marky Post, and I didn't care for anybody else. And I would have, if the show had centered around her, I would have watched it all the time.
I think The Golden Girls is one of the most consistent shows on the air.
Yep.
Some episodes better than others, but never really falling off the standard. I think it was a very consistent show.
It was
in
the top 10 for 6 of its 7 years. You can't fault that.
Yeah, and you know, and the thing is, this is a show that wasn't just popular. It was critically acclaimed. This is a show that all 4 of those ladies won an Emmy. Its main director, Terry Hughes, won an Emmy. Its creator won a couple of Emmys as a writer. Everybody in the cast eventually won an Emmy. And Estelle Getty's Emmy, I have to say, was very, very well deserved. It was in an episode where Sophia had this friend on the beach where she would sit with him on a bench and they'd talk and they'd try to guess or make up stories about people that they spotted, and it turns out that he had progressive dementia, and one day he just wasn't there, and he'd been taken away to be taken care of. And meanwhile, Dorothy, who was concerned about her mother disappearing, found out that she was just visiting a friend, and the friend's daughter found out, oh, well, this is where my dad's been going, so that's okay. And it was just a really wonderful episode about the two daughters connecting and their parents connecting. And there was absolutely nothing romantic. It was just two friends. And again, this is another one where this is a fairly serious episode, but it didn't crush you at all, you know?
Where is the Golden Girls currently available?
The Golden Girls is currently streaming for free, well, not free, but with any Hulu subscription. I believe there are various episodes up on Hulu, and all seven seasons are available on disc.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you can, you can get each season separately, and there was also, Disney put out it's hard to get now, but 10 years ago, Disney put out a box set that came with a purse, it was some kind of big carry bag. That set now goes for over $500. So
yeah,
you know,
I wish I had the money at the time to buy it, because when it came out, it was like $150. I wish I'd have been able to afford it, because, man, I flipped that.
Yeah, it's not, you can't get it now, because it's just some crazy price. But, you know, you can pick up the seasons individually, and you know, it's still out on DVD. It's one, you know, if like a lot of classic series do end up on Blu-ray, but the Golden Girls haven't yet. But being a Disney property, it probably will get there eventually.
Yep.
Wait a minute, I spoke too soon. Oh, it's not. Okay, it's not a, no, it's not. I thought it was, but no, I was mistaken.
No, it actually is now. It is now a Disney property because of the way the TV holdings work out. And in fact, in 2009, the cast was named. They were all inducted at the same time as Disney Legends.
I was going to mention that, and you stole it from me. So you got one this week for me, and so yeah, there you go.
Yep.
It'll probably end up on the Disney streaming service sooner or later.
It could.
Possibly. I don't know when its contract with Hulu runs out, but it's very possible that could happen. I've been enjoying it off of Hulu, and it's just one of those shows that I think I'll always turn back to as long as it's available somewhere and watch an episode here or there. So is there anything, before we start wrapping this up, is there anything that we want to say about the show that we haven't gotten a chance to mention yet? So, John?
I don't think there is much, except I'd like to spend a vacation at St. Olaf's.
A vacation in St. Olaf's. Yeah, as long as nobody tries to serve me burgers while wearing one of those Longenhurten.
Uh-huh. I think it was a wonderful show. I think it was a lot of fun. And very,
absolutely.
very well written, and it's a good show. And it works outside the time in which it was made.
Mm-hmm. So what about you, Alan? Anything you want to say before we start wrapping this up?
No, I'm you know, I'm fine with it. I like the show a lot. I wished I'd watched it more when it was on, you know, every Saturday, you know, Saturday nights for all those years. It was always on Saturdays. I watched it when I could, but that was back. It was on during my Air Force times. I was working second and third shifts. So, you know, if I got to see it, I did. But, you know, I caught more episodes probably in syndication than I did in regular run.
Yeah.
Just due to, you know, because I wasn't a 9-to-5 guy. I was a second and third shifter. I had Air Force job on second shift and a part-time job on third shift. So I never, you know, when I got to watch a TV show in real time, it was rare. And then the shows that I wanted, back then, you could only do so many. The shows you really loved, you taped on the VCR, and the Golden Girls didn't rate VCR taping. I'm, you know, unless you happen to be watching an episode or, and, you know, like, okay, I'll get the last 15 minutes on the VCR, but that might be a rarity. But, you know, that's not one that was like, I gotta tape this episode thing. It didn't go like that. You know, just some shows that, I don't know about you guys. See, you guys, he's an old. The other guy's older, but I'm Adam's younger. I don't think he knows the strain of choosing what to record on your VCR.
Oh, I remember those days. That's one of the reasons why I ended up, because I got overruled by the other people in the house. I was the kid who actually loved Seinfeld the first two or three seasons, and then I didn't get to watch the rest of the show because the other people in the house ruled me over. However, I did get to choose to watch Homicide over some other stuff, and thank God I did.
Well, see, Homicide's a show you would definitely DVR, you know? Golden Girls, you were like in the back of your mind. You knew that, in 5 years this is going to be on at 5 o'clock in the afternoon every day. So, you know, you didn't worry about it.
Oh, yeah, Homicide was a show that I, in the last two or three seasons, I have most of the last two or three seasons of that on tape. I wish I'd kept the first few seasons on tape, but I didn't. But I have a collection of old VHS tapes, off-air tapes, and I've got seasons 5, 6, and 7 of Homicide on VHS. Probably some of the episodes, even with some of the commercials left in.
Well,
Homicide
is
easily one of the best shows of all time.
Homicide in a box set on DVD, and I'll, you know, so.
Yeah, so you finally went and saw the whole thing then, John, huh?
Yes, and I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, then we will have to eventually do a show. Maybe I think the next slot that's definitely available is September, though. If something comes up, I may push it up a little sooner, possibly September. Maybe I can hit both of you guys for that.
What's your next episode, Adam?
Well, I was just about to get to that. I think that just about covers everything. I know that Carl has something. I think Carl has something coming up this week, but I'm not sure what. I know that he definitely has an episode he's working on for the week after. So stay tuned for Carl's Cavern. And for myself, Cathode Ray Mission will be back next week with an episode focusing on our favorite couples and families. Hopefully another fun little short episode. And the week after that, we will be coming back once again to discuss The Sopranos. So those are the next two episodes for Cathode Ray Mission. So I want to thank everybody out there for listening, and I want to thank both of you for coming on and participating in tonight's episode. And I think with that, we can call it an evening, gentlemen. So on the count of three, we can all say goodnight. One, two, three.
Good night.
Thank you for being a friend.
Indeed.